Well, it is one of Ireland's most baffling missing persons cases. And it's in the news again with Gardaí confirming that they now believe the couple in question never left Ireland, despite numerous reported sightings abroad. So what really happened to Conor and Sheila Dwyer, and what, if anything, has a renewed investigation uncovered? It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. Now, Conor and Sheila Dwyer went missing from their home in Fermoy in County Cork in April 1991. After an initial investigation revealed little in way of clues or leads as to what had happened, a renewed appeal for information was made on RTÉ's Crime Call in 2024. But the case remains unsolved and mysterious. So does the understanding that the Dwyers met their fate here on this island bring us any closer to an answer? Well, joining me to discuss this is Southern correspondent with the Irish Independent, Ralph Regal. Ralph, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks, Ciara.
Ralph, you're from Fermoy yourself. It's your hometown. Would you have had any dealings with the couple? Would you have known them to see it all?
Yeah, I would have known. I wouldn't have known them personally because obviously there's a bit of an age gap. I would have been probably in my early 20s, mid-20s at the time that Conor and Sheila Dwyer vanished. But I would have known Conor. He was quite a colourful figure around the town because at that time he was working as a personal assistant for a German industrialist who had a large property at Castle Lyons, which is a village just outside Fermoy. And one of Conor's jobs was that he would look after this man's collection of quite prestigious cars. So you'd see Conor driving around in like Rolls Royces and very fancy sports cars. And he was meticulous in terms of how he looked after those cars. So he was quite a well-known gentleman around Fermoy. He was also known for being, as I said, a gentleman, because you'd see him if he would take his wife shopping. He would insist that she stay in the car until he walked around to the passenger side and opened the door for her. So he was a very courteous, very polite man if you met him out.
What else do we know about Sheila Dwyer?
Yeah, Sheila was a mother of two, very religious lady. She was very, very close to her own family. The couple would have lived at Chapel Hill in Fermoy. It's within sight, within shadow of St. Patrick's Church. And Sheila would have been very religious. She was very, you'd see her quite a lot at weekly mass in Fermoy. And she had a very close circuit of friends. She loved the community. She loved, social gatherings and things like that. So again, while she wouldn't quite have had the same kind of public profile as her husband, she would have been a very well-liked and well-known person within the community.
So what has always, I suppose, fascinated me about this case is the fact that this was a couple, kind of a very average Irish couple. He was working, she was a homemaker. They had two boys, two children, living in Fermoy, very connected to the local area. And just like that, and you use the word, they vanish.
Yeah, Ciara, it genuinely is as if this couple stepped off the planet. And you know, in cases like this, there's sadly missing persons cases are nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, any working journalist today who receives emails from the Garda Press, almost every day you're getting multiple missing persons alerts. And thankfully, most of them are safely solved. So they do happen on a virtually daily basis within Irish society. But in an awful lot of those cases, there's a reason, or people will be aware, whether it could be financial, it could be mental health, it could be security, it could be something going on in someone's personal life. So there's a reason that can explain the disappearance. But what's quite startling about this one is that no one has been able to pinpoint a specific reason why Conor and Sheila Dwyer disappeared. And of course, it's extraordinary that a couple would vanish in these circumstances, because missing persons happen, as I said, quite a lot, but it's usually just a single individual. But for a couple of this age to vanish in these circumstances without any indication that there was something wrong or an explanation for their disappearance is quite extraordinary. And again, it's worth pointing out that the couple were last seen in public on April the 30th, 1991. The last telephone contact Sheila's family had with her was the following day. And from that day until now, there has been absolutely no confirmed sighting, no contact. Their bank accounts were never accessed. There was no written or electronic communication or indication of where they might be. When the concern was raised and Gardaí gained access to the house on Chapel Hill, about 2 weeks after the couple were last seen in public, their suitcases were there. All of their clothing was there. All of their travel documents, all of their crucial personal possessions were within the house. There was even a significant sum of cash in the property. And you would have thought that if a couple were planning to disappear, the one thing that they would bring with them would be ready cash. The only thing that was missing from the house or outside the house was Connor's white Toyota Cressida car. From that day to this, that car with a registration number of 5797ZT. It has never been found, never spotted. And Gardaí have always believed that if they had any indication of where the car was, it would be a vital clue in trying to unravel the mystery of Conor and Sheila Dwyer's disappearance.
Let's go back to that last confirmed sighting. Where were they seen? And who was that final contact with? And what was the nature of that conversation? And was anything amiss at that point?
Yeah, what actually happened was it was April the 30th, 1991, around lunchtime. And Conor and Sheila Dwyer lived in Chapel Hill, as I explained, very close to St. Patrick's Church. And they were going to attend the funeral of a person they knew within the community. And a local girl happened to be walking down the street, saw them, exchanged a few pleasantries and moved on. But that is the last time anyone saw Conor and Sheila Dwyer. It's the last confirmed sighting that Gardaí have to work with. There was a telephone contact the following day, but there was no sighting. So really from that day, Gardaí have not been able to pinpoint where Conor and Sheila Dwyer went. And of course, the difference between 1991 and today, we do live in a very monitored society. So there's an awful lot of CCTV footage in Irish society, whether it be security cameras on businesses and security cameras on homes, or even just general security cameras that the Gardaí might operate. So it's a huge asset and resource for Gardaí when they're trying to trace vehicles or the movements of people. They didn't have that back in 1991. So they weren't able to follow up on that sighting from April the 30th and see, well, where did Conor and Sheila Dwyer go when they left the church? What direction did they head in? They really don't have an idea.
But as you say, she did speak to her sister, I believe, on the 1st of May 1991. Nothing seemed to miss at that point, but no further contact has ever been made with them since that phone call. Who reported them missing and what prompted that?
Yeah, it was actually Sheila's sister had contacted Gardaí. As I said, Sheila was very close to her family, so there would be contact on almost a daily basis. And for about 10 days, there had been repeated attempts made to contact Sheila and Dwyer. There was phone calls made to the property which weren't answered. There were calls to the property with no one answering the front door. And eventually the family were so concerned, they went to the Gardaí. So at that time, the Garda station was not a great distance away from Chapel Hill. Officers went to Chapel Hill. They gained entry to the property. No trace of Conor and Sheila Dwyer inside. No explanation for their disappearance. And as I said, virtually all of their personal possessions were intact within the house. There was no sign of forced entry. There was no sign of a struggle. The only thing that was missing was the white Toyota Cressida car.
And I know that despite notifying ports and ferry services at the time, there was no evidence that that vehicle ever left Ireland. What age were they and what age were their children?
Yeah, well, Conor was 62, Sheila was 61, and their children would have been in their 20s, late 20s at the time. They had two boys. Now, they were both out of Fermoy at that time working. In fact, I think one of them may have been overseas. So it came as a huge shock to the children as well. And particularly that the fact that time went on and there was no trace of the couple being found. Usually in cases like this, in the first kind of 3 months, there's some kind of an indication or something will come to light that might give an idea of what was involved or what had happened. But nothing of the sort ever happened in this case. Gardaí drew a blank in terms of tracing the car. There was a crime called, they did a recreation of the Toyota Cressida car driving away from Chapel Hill back in 1991 in the hope of jogging people's memories. And over the years, there'd been repeated calls for information. There was repeated stories in newspapers and on radio, but nothing ever gave Gardaí that crucial breakthrough that they required. There were reported sightings, and particularly overseas. There was a couple, I think, from Germany, and there was one from France. But when Gardaí investigated these through Interpol, who of course were made aware of this case, they came to the conclusion that they were well-intentioned contacts from members of the public, but that they were confused. It wasn't Conor and Sheila Dwyer, that people had made mistakes in confusing other individuals with them, and that while well-intentioned, these people did not see Conor and Sheila Dwyer.
And what searches were carried out? What lines of inquiry other than that were pursued, Ralph?
Yeah, well, of course, as you mentioned, ports, airports, ferry terminals, car parks. Initially, the focus was on Conor and Sheila Dwyer, but increasingly it became the car. And Gardaí always believed if they could find the car, it would give them an indication of what they were dealing with in terms of Conor and Sheila Dwyer's disappearance. And it actually went to the point where Gardaí even began searching scrap yards and secondhand car parts dealerships in the hope that if they could find some trace of a part of the Toyota, it might give them something to work with. But nothing was ever found. Another major avenue of search, of course, was the River Blackwater. The River Blackwater flows right through Fermoy. And just in case that the vehicle had somehow entered the river, there were repeated searches conducted of stretches of the river. And I suppose quite remarkable is that Fermoy is quite a relatively small town, but the year before Conor and Sheila Dwyer's disappearance, another man had vanished from Fermoy, William Fennessy. Now, he disappeared in March of 1990. And again, to have two such, extraordinary disappearances in one small town did seem quite strange. Now, they were both totally unrelated, but as it transpired, 22 years later, the Blackwater Sub Aqua Club were doing a dive on the river. They were just doing a routine training operation. There had been flooding in the river over the previous weeks, and it's believed that part of the riverbed had shifted. And just as the divers were about to finish their operation, one of them spotted what he thought was a vehicle buried in the riverbed. There were further investigations made, and it transpired that this, in fact, was a car. It was a Daihatsu Charade car. They were able to get the license plate, and it turned out to have been the vehicle that was owned by William Fennessy, who had vanished the year before Conor and Sheila Dwyer. And further investigations revealed human remains in the car, which were later confirmed as Mr. Fennessy. So that mystery was solved. But despite repeated searches, no trace was ever found of the vehicle that was used by Conor and Sheila Dwyer.
I know you would have spoken to one of the guards involved in the search at the time in this investigation. That's retired Garda Sergeant Joe Watkins. What was his sense of it?
I think they always felt that the answer somehow rested within the North Cork community. And there was an incredible effort made to solve this case. I know Joe had said to me many times over the years that the prime motivating factor for all of the Gardaí in this is that they wanted to offer closure to the family, that this was a terrible thing for the family to have to live with, not knowing what had happened to their loved ones and trying to find some answers that they could offer the family. And despite repeated efforts, despite repeated lines of inquiries, they were never able to get that one crucial piece of information that could lead to a breakthrough. I mean, the lines of inquiry even went overseas because, of course, Conor Dwyer, as I mentioned, had worked for a German industrialist. And other people who worked for this German industrialist, the German industrialist himself, were questioned to say, look, did they have any indication of, Conor's mindset in the weeks before his disappearance? Could they have thought of anything work-wise that might have explained him vanishing? But again, all to no avail.
And I know there was a sighting, as you say, in Munich back in 1993. I think there was a sighting in Lourdes Airport. You mentioned that Sheila was very religious soon after the disappearance. None of these were substantiated by the Gardaí. So I would imagine there have been numerous, countless rumours and theories in the area as to what happened to this couple.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing, Akira, because I think the family have to live with this, that without any hard facts to explain what happened, the rumor mill unfortunately does take off. And there have been various rumors. I mean, you know, you can go from outside involvement to suspicious circumstances to two people who just wanted to, you know, step off the radar to even, you know, personal tragedies. All of those things have been mentioned over the years. And I should stress, all of them without any facts or evidence whatsoever. It's just people trying to fill in the blanks to explain this extraordinary mystery. And I think it's worth stressing that the Gardaí are still working very hard on this case. And just 2 years ago, there was a repeat, a fresh appeal for information. There was another focus on it in terms of the crime call program operated by Gardaí. New information has come to light. Unfortunately, the indications are that that new information is not yet the crucial breakthrough that Gardaí were hoping for, but they are interrogating all of those and new lines of inquiry and new pieces of information in the hope that it'll ultimately push the case in territory where answers can be uncovered.
As you say, there's lots of speculation whether or not there could have been foul play here, but as you say, there was no evidence of that in the house, whether or not there had been potentially a suicide pact between the couple, again, totally speculative. And I presume everything, their travel records, their medical records, their financial records, would all have been scrutinised at the time and probably again and again through further investigations.
Oh, yeah, very much so, Kira. I mean, there's absolutely nothing has been left unturned in terms of the scale of this investigation. Medical records of both Conor and Sheila Dwyer, financial records, employment records, even their movement and even places where they were known to frequent in terms of holidays and day trips. All of those have been examined amid the possibility that, you know, had anyone seen them there in the days after the last public sighting in Fermoy. So it really has been quite an intensive investigation. And again, I think it's important to say that all of the Gardaí involved in the original investigation are now retired. But in fairness, every single one of them has been doing everything they can to support the ongoing current investigation to try and offer some form of closure to this family.
And there was no history of mental health illness either.
No, there doesn't seem to have been any indication in that. As I said, like Conor was a colourful character, but certainly nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, he was a man that was very proud of his appearance. He was always immaculately dressed. He took great care in his appearance, and not just his own appearance, but his cars. So every time you saw Conor in his car, it had been washed, it was spotlessly clean, and it was perfectly maintained.
How difficult is it for their children, who are obviously in their adulthood at this stage, and for family members, I'd imagine, who still live in Fermoy, who have absolutely no sense of what happened to their loved ones?
Yeah, I mean, it really has to be a nightmare because, you know, I think it's the not knowing is what haunts people because, you know, we all have fertile imaginations and imagination in the absence of hard facts does tend to run away with us. And it's been very difficult. I mean, again, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that for almost 35 years, this family have been living with this mystery and not knowing what happened to their loved ones. Despite the best efforts of the Gardaí to offer them answers, they haven't been able to find those answers as yet. I mean, certainly the family have been very supportive of each other. And I do know that the family have been very supportive of the Gardaí in terms of backing all of the appeals for new information and all of their efforts to try and find answers. But it really is, you can imagine it, it's every family's worst nightmare.
I mean, recently Gardaí have said they've now come to the conclusion that they never left Ireland, that the truth to this remains here on this island. What has led them to that decision?
I think it's a combination of the new evidence. I think it's an analysis of the older evidence and the fact that what was found in the house, if there had been any plans to leave Ireland or start a new life off the radar somewhere else, the material that was found in the house wouldn't have been found in the house. So I think that's one of the major parts of it. And they've never found any indication, particularly from the UK police, that Conor and Sheila Dwyer would have left Ireland. Of course, it would have been virtually impossible for them to fly without being detected. Whereas had they the most obvious thing would have been to travel to the UK. by ferry or by road. And at that time, there were very careful records kept by the UK authorities, and they have absolutely no record of Conor and Sheila Dwyer or anyone matching Conor and Sheila Dwyer's description with that type of Toyota car having travelled to or through the UK. So on the basis of all of the information, I think that the conclusion that, or certainly the belief that Gardaí have, is that Conor and Sheila Dwyer didn't leave Ireland, and that, as they've always believed, the answer to this mystery rests within the greater North Cork community, and the belief that someone out there knows something. Perhaps it might be only something small, it might be something that they've dismissed themselves as irrelevant, but Gardaí believe that piece of information is out there and it could hold the key to solving this case.
Well, the case certainly remains one of the most enduring mysteries in Irish missing persons history, and very, very difficult for all of their family members. Ralph Regal, Southern correspondent with the Irish Independent, thank you so much for joining
My
us
pleasure.
On that.
Thanks, Ciara.
Well, that's it from us on the podcast today. You can listen back to every episode of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud player. But for now, from me, Ciara Doherty, take care.